This week's Parsha is Parshas Amor, and tonight's shiur is titled Desecration/Sanctification of Hashem's Name. So tonight I want to take up the mitzvah and the iser of Chilul Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, and it's brought down in this week's Parsha. I mainly want to focus on Shitas Rashi, just how does Rashi approach the mitzvah, and what is the philosophy of the mitzvah from the standpoint of Rashi. So it's really just three psukim, and we're going to look at Rashi and ask, you know, the appropriate questions and tie everything together. Let's begin with Vayikra, Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. And I'm starting here because I believe that Rashi starts here and maintains that this is one unit. It begins as such. Ushmartem mitzvosai v'asisem osam ani Hashem. You should guard my mitzvos and you should do them. I am Hashem. V'lo sechalalu eshem kodshi v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael ani Hashem mekadishchem. And you should not desecrate the holy name of Hashem, and you should sanctify him amongst or within B'nai Yisrael. I am Hashem who has sanctified you. Hamotzi eschem mi'eret Mitzrayim, lios lachem le'elokim, ani Hashem. I took you out of Mitzrayim in order to be your God. I am Hashem. Okay, so the three psukim, first pasuk saying keep the mitzvos. Second pasuk says don't desecrate Hashem's name and sanctify him. And the last pasuk is, Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim in order to be your God. I am Hashem. So what are some of the questions that emerge from these three psukim? Debbie. Or well, anybody. Yes. Do you have any questions? Any questions on these three psukim? What is strange about the psukim?
If I was listening correctly, you said I am Hashem multiple times, correct?
Okay, good. It's actually, I think we asked this question last time, but it does say, Ani Hashem, many times. The first pasuk, Lamed Aleph, it says, Ani Hashem. In Lamed Beis, it says, Ani Hashem Mekadishchem. And the last pasuk, it says, Ani Hashem. So it's a good question. Why does it keep making reference to the idea of Ani Hashem? How does that fit into this mitzvah? Okay, good. Good question. Okay, there's other questions, I think, obvious questions. One is Ushmartem, the first pasuk, for example. It says, Ushmartem mitzvosai v'asisem osam Ani Hashem. Is that just a general statement? How does that fit in with the whole theme over here of Kiddush Hashem and Chilul Hashem? So what is the point of mentioning that you should keep the mitzvos, and why is that significant? And then also, what exactly is this a reference to, the idea of Chilul Hashem versus Kiddusha? We're not exactly sure what the mitzvah is. It just says, don't desecrate his name. So what does that mean? What does that entail? And the last question is, what does it have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? In Lamed Gimel, it says, Hamotzias Chem Me'art Mitzrayim, Liosachem Elokim, Ani Hashem. Why is that even mentioned here? What does it have to do with the mitzvah in specific? So those are the general questions. So we have, why Ushmartem Mitzvosai V'asisem Osam? Why is that mentioned? What is the nature of this mitzvah to not desecrate Hashem's name and to sanctify him amongst Klal Yisrael? And what does Yetzias Mitzrayim have to do with anything? Okay, so let's look at Rashi. We're going to read through Rashi and then go back on Rashi and try to explain Rashi. If you look in source number 2, it's Rashi, Perek Chof Beis, Pasuk Lamed, Aleph, Ushmartem, Zu HaMishnah. Ushmartem is a reference to learning. V'asisem, Zehamasa. And this is a reference to the actions. So he's just explaining the pshat of the Pasuk. Ushmartem mitzvosai means that you should learn the mitzvos. And v'asisam osam means that you should do the mitzvos, ani Hashem. Okay? We're going to come back to that. But why is that significant? V'lo sechalalu. So what is the actual iser here of desecrating Hashem's name? Lavor al divrei mezidin. To transgress intentionally various isurim. Okay? And the Sifsei Chachamim, although I didn't bring him in, he explains even further, Rotzel Omar, Misha Rotzel Lahavircha Al Hadas Al Tishmalo. He says it's a case where somebody is forcing you to do an Avera, and he's saying you shouldn't listen to him. And that's what it means, Lavor Al Divrei Mezidin. So that's what it means, Lo Sechalulu. Don't, if somebody forces you to do an Avera, don't listen to him, don't give in. Mimashma Shinemar Velosichalalu, from the fact that it says do not desecrate, Ma Tamalomar Vinikdashti, what do you learn from Vinikdashti? Masur Atmucha Vikadeshmi. So that teaches you that you have to give up of yourself in order to sanctify the name of Hashem. Okay? Yachol biyachid, you might think that occurs even in private with one other individual. Tamalomar Besoch Bnei Yisrael. So that's why it says in the Pasuk, Besoch b'nei Yisrael, that amongst Klal Yisrael. So when are you chayev to give up your life? When somebody forces you to do an Aveira amongst the public, amongst Klal Yisrael. And everybody, please ask questions if anything, if you don't understand anything, or if you want to ask questions on Rashi, just ask the question. Okay, and he goes on.
You're forced to give up your life if you have to do an Aveira?
Yeah. So if, let's say, somebody comes to you and points a gun to you in public and says that, you know, either violate this Aveira, eat this Chelev, for example, or I'm going to shoot you, according to Rashi, he's saying that you have to die for God, for God's name, the Kadesh Shmei. So we have to understand why that is, okay? And then he goes on. He says, there's a lot of questions in this Rashi, and I'm going to summarize the questions. Ukshumosar atmo, when you actually give yourself over to die, yimsor atmo al menas lomos. You have to have in mind that you're willing to die. Shekol hamosar atmo al menas hanes. Let's say you are willing to give up of yourself, but you, in the back of your mind, you think that a miracle is going to occur. Ein osin lo nes. That person who thinks that, a nes will not occur to him. Shekein matzinu bechananya mishal v'azarya shalom masru atman amanas hanes. There's a case later on, which I'm going to explain, by mishal chananya mishal v'azarya, where they lost their lives, but a nes did occur. But in the psukim, it implies that they would have given up their lives even if a nes wouldn't occur. Shneamar v'hein lo yidia luhu loch malka dila lokach lo isna palchin matzio v'lo matzio yidia luhu loch. So the psukim imply that they were willing to give up their life even if a nes were not to occur, and we're going to analyze that. So what are the questions on this Rashi? One question I think is, why do you have to give up your life, and what's the difference between in private and in public? Okay, because Rashi says yachol b'yachid tamalomar besoch b'nei Yisrael. So why do you have to give up your life if somebody forces you to do an iser? And why does it matter whether it's in public or it's in private? And then also Rashi said,
why does your thought process matter?
Good. Okay. Good. Why does your thought process matter? Okay. Good. You mean in terms of the nes? The nes?
Yeah.
Yes. And also, why? What is this strange idea that if a person has in mind that if a nes occurs, that a nes won't occur to him? So why? Why is that so? Why not? Maybe a nace will occur.
Yes.
Okay.
That implies that a nace will occur otherwise.
Okay, good. Good point. So there's an implication in Rashi that a nace will occur. So we're going to analyze that. It's a good question or good point. Okay? We're going to come back. Like I said, we're going to analyze each aspect of Rashi. Then at the end, he takes up Hamotzi Eschem. And he says, Al Menas Kain. On this condition, meaning Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim so that we would be Mekadesh v'nikdashti, so that we would accomplish this mitzvah. So what is that? What does that mean? And Ani Hashem ne'amon l'shalim schar. The last part of the Ani Hashem, whenever it says Ani Hashem, it means that Hashem is trustworthy in order to repay back schar. So we have to understand, same question as the first pasuk, you know, why even mention Hamotzi Eschem? What does it mean that it was on this condition? And why mention Nem on the Shalim Tzchar? Why are these ideas relevant to the mitzvah of Kiddush and Chilul Hashem? So let's start from the top, okay? And we're going to go step by step. The first question was, Ushmartem mitzvosai v'atzisem osam ani Hashem. The Torah, before introducing Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, it tells us that you should learn the mitzvos and you should do them, for I am Hashem. As Rashi says in number 2, Shmartem zu ha-mishnah v'asisem zu ha-masa. Okay, and there's actually a medrash, which is similar to Rashi. It's the same idea, but it expands a little bit more than what Rashi's saying, and I think we can use the medrash to understand why the psukim are bringing in this idea, this concept. Look at number 3, Ushmartem v'asisem, Ushmartem zu mishnah. Shmartem implies learning, v'asisem zu hamasa. And asisem in the pasuk means doing, action. Melamed, this comes to teach you, shekol she'eno b'mishnah, eno b'masa. Anybody who doesn't learn does not do, is not involved in the action of mitzvah. So what exactly does this medrash mean? What does it mean that anybody who doesn't learn doesn't do? Why is that true? Why is that the case? Is it just telling you practically that if you don't learn about the mitzvot, you're not going to know what to do? That seems obvious. So what exactly is the purpose of this medrash? What does it mean, anybody who doesn't learn, who's not involved in learning about the mitzvot, also isn't involved in action, in doing the mitzvot? Okay? Any thoughts? Okay? I mean, I think I think this Medrash is pointing out an idea that will relate back to Rashi. What is this concept that kol she'eino b'mishnah, eino b'masa? I think he's referring to a certain type of individual. See, there are people who don't study mitzvos, and they don't really understand the philosophy of the mitzvah or the beauty of the structure of the mitzvah, but they do the actions of the mitzvos, and that's what they were taught to do when they were younger. According to this Medrash, a person who doesn't learn about the mitzvos, it means that their actions, when they perform the mitzvos, their performance is lacking. It means that it's incomplete. It doesn't mean that without learning about the mitzvos, you can't do the mitzvos. I mean, that's true. If you don't know anything about mitzvos, you can't do them. But I think the Medrash is referring to learning about the philosophy and the structure of the mitzvah. If you don't learn and appreciate the philosophy and the structure of the mitzvah, so the maisios, the actions that you do, are incomplete. They're hollow actions. And I think that's the idea of this Medrash. Now, how does that tie into Rashi, and how can we introduce the topic of Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem with this idea? See, Rashi is pointing out that in order for a person to be able to accomplish this mitzvah, because it's a very difficult mitzvah to accomplish, you're asking a person to give up of his life for God's name, to sanctify God's name, the Torah is introducing how a person will be able to do that. So the Torah is telling you, Ushmartem mitzvosai v'asisem osam ani Hashem. The only type of person who'll be able to give up of his life for God's name is a person who's complete in his learning and in his actions. If a person is only a person who's tied to the actions, to the maisios, let's say a person does sukkah or lulav, but he has no idea of the structure of lulav or no idea of the philosophy of lulav or sukkah, so the actions are hollow. That type of person will not be able to accomplish the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem because it's not real to him. The Torah and mitzvahs aren't real to him. But only a person who is perfect and who is complete in his shmirah, in his learning, and also his maisa, in his actions, only that person will be able to accomplish the mitzvah of lo sechalu and v'nikdashti. So the Torah is very beautiful. So the Torah is starting off in Lamed Aleph and introducing the topic of Kiddush and Chil Hashem. It's telling you that a person has to be shomer the mitzvos and he has to do them. Meaning, it's not enough to just do the mitzvos and it's not enough to just learn the mitzvos. But you have to be a complete person philosophically in order for the next mitzvah to be accomplished by the person. So it's really an introduction to the mitzvah of Kiddush and Chil Hashem. Okay, any questions? Okay. So now we move on to the next part of Rashi. So first Rashi introduces the topic. Ushmartem, you have to be learned and you have to know why you're doing the mitzvos, and only that individual will be able to accomplish this idea of giving up your life for God's name. But now we come up with this second idea, which is Rashi Lamed Beis V'lo Sechalu, and he says, Lavor al divrei miziden. And as we said before, it means that if a person forces you to do an aveira, you're not supposed to give in to the person, and you're supposed to do the opposite. So then why does the Torah say v'nikdashti? A person has to give up their life in a situation in order to sanctify God's name. And you might think that this is in private, if there's only one witness, Tamalomar, the Torah says, Besoch b'nei Yisrael. So I just want to understand, what does it mean? What's the idea of Lo Sechalu Hashem Kachi? Why do we say, don't be Mechal the Shem Hashem? Why don't we just say, don't be Mechal Hashem? So why mention the Shem Hashem? And also, what's the difference between in private and in public? And if you look in number four, Rashi on the Gemara, he says openly, Lo Sechalu Befarhesya Ika Chilul Hashem. In public, there is Chil Hashem. V'tzarech l'kadesh es Hashem, v'nzehu v'nikdashti. So Moser nafsho al avas yotro. So in that situation, in a public situation, there is Chil Hashem. And that's in that situation, a person has to sanctify the name of Hashem because of the love of his creator. So Rashi on the Gemara is also highlighting this idea that there's a difference between farhesia in public and in private. So the question is, what is the difference? Why is there a difference? And what does it mean to just not desecrate the name of Hashem by not giving in? And how do you sanctify the name of Hashem? Look at number five, just to clarify one more point. The Kama Farhesia, how many people do you need in order to make it public? Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Farhesya Pechusa Ma'asara B'nei Adam. You need at least 10 people. Pshita Yisraelim B'inan. And you need 10 Jews. Dichsiv V'nikdashti B'soch B'nei Yisrael. Because it says that you should sanctify me amongst B'nei Yisrael. Okay, so these are the questions that I want to understand in Rashi. What exactly is the nature of this Isser, and why is it different if it's in private versus public? Okay, anybody have any thoughts or any ideas? Why would it be different if a person is saying to you, you know, you either die or do this Avera in public versus private? Why is one defined, and what is Chil Hashem? What is the problem of Chil Hashem? Okay, so one of the questions that we asked is the idea of Hashem. Why does it say, Lo Sechalelu Hashem Kodshi? So what is the Shem? What is the Shem a reference to? So the Shem Hashem is really an idea in how man relates to God. See, when we study the Shemos of God, but specifically the Shem of Hashem, so it gives us insight into the Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through that we can gain insight into God. So the idea of, why does it say V'lo Sechalelu Hashem Kodshi? That we're not really desecrating God, because God can't, you know, isn't affected by man's actions, but we're desecrating our ability to perceive God and our idea and our ability to appreciate God. So what is the, and then when you're a Vinekdashti, and Rashi says Kadesh Shmi, to sanctify God's name, what you're doing is that you're sanctifying the ability, or by sanctifying his name, you're allowing people to perceive God in a certain way, to have a certain proper perception of God. So that's why I believe that the term shame is used in Chil Hashem, because the idea of shame means human perception and not God himself. But what is the difference, or what is Chil Hashem, and what's the difference between B'nai Yisrael, B'soch B'nai Yisrael, and in private, according to Rashi? So Rashi seems to be saying that the idea of Chil Hashem is that it creates a pagam. It creates a defect in Klal Yisrael as a whole. And the idea, I think, is that when you witness something, sometimes when you witness something, it has like a powerful effect on you. And even though you may think that it doesn't and you can overcome it, just the witnessing of something alone will impede or affect your perception of something for the rest of your life. So the idea of Chil Hashem is that when a person gives in to authority and is over an Avera in public, so it creates a defect in Klal Yisrael as a whole. And that's why it says, B'soch B'nai Yisrael. B'nai Yisrael, the minimum of B'nai Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, is 10 people, but it creates a defect. And where does it create a defect? It creates a defect in Klal Yisrael's ability to perceive God properly. And when a person gives in to authority, meaning human authority, in public, so it has this effect. And it's not an effect. This is not a problem within a yachid, just in front of one person, but it's a problem in Klal Yisrael, B'soch B'nai Yisrael. So Rashi is really highlighting that the difference, the Isser Chil Hashem, only exists in public, because it's really an idea that Klal Yisrael now has a defect in their ability to perceive God. And that's created through witnessing this event. Like, as I said before, there are many examples that could be utilized to show that when you witness something horrific, it has an effect on you, and it affects your perception of something for the rest of your life. When you witness, for like a horrible car accident, or when you're part of a horrible car accident, so it affects the way that you drive for the rest of your life. And yes, a person can overcome that, but there are certain things that are so powerful, there are certain events that are so powerful that no matter what, it'll affect you and it'll change your perception. And this is one of those events. If a person is in public, it'll change, and he's over an Avera, B'mezid, because of human authority, because a human being puts a gun to his head, it'll affect Klal Yisrael's perception of God. It'll take away from it. But the opposite is the case. You know, that's why I think it says Kadesh Shemo, also sanctify his name. The opposite is the case when man gives up his life. Because when man gives up his life and he doesn't give in to human authority, it elevates our perception of God. So the people who are witnessing it, they can now perceive God or come to God, you know, with a higher ability, with a greater ability. Okay?
In terms of the effect that it has on other people?
Yeah.
So I don't understand, like, if somebody is in a group of 10 men,
yeah,
this is just a less, then would that be... I was thinking that maybe it's on himself because of the group, not on other people watching, you know?
if that's not the case, I don't understand it.
Well, what's the difference? What do you say? I'm sorry. What was the last part?
So my thought was that the person himself who's committing the avera in front of 10 people is the one who might affect him. I don't see how it would affect others if there is a group present or not.
No, it does affect you. As when you see an event, when you see somebody, when you see somebody giving in to, it's basically you're desecrating God, because when you see an event like this, it does have an effect on you. That's the whole point that I'm. That's the idea that I'm trying to express. That even though you might be a God fearing Jew, but sometimes when you witness something, it has an emotional and a psychological effect on you. And you may deny that effect, but it does. It just does. So the idea of Lo Sechalu Hashem Kodshi, the reason why it's amongst 10 men is because it's a defect in Klal Yisrael, that when Klal Yisrael witnessed this, it affects and it negatively affects their ability to perceive God properly and to have the proper approach to God. But when it's in private, it's not a pegam. The whole idea of the Isser is that it's a pegam in Klal Yisrael, not that a witness won't have the proper way of. But we're going to come to why it's Besoch B'nai Yisrael, and we're going to elaborate on that point. But the main idea is that this is the concept of Chilul Hashem, is that it and Rashi's focusing on the witnesses because it creates a negative perception of God. It affects, the witnessing this event affects Klal Yisrael's ability to perceive God properly. And the opposite is true with Kadesh Shemi. And that's why it's using the idea of shame, the idea of human perception, that when a person doesn't give in and they die instead, it has a positive effect on Klal Yisrael's ability to perceive God. Okay, hopefully that answered the questions. Okay, so I just want to move on.
I'm so sorry. It seems like it's just like an objective thing rather than the effect. It's like if you did an avera because there was like only 8 people present.
Well, ten people has a din of Eidah. It's really an idea in Klal Yisrael that when you have a minion of people, it's really a reflection of Klal Yisrael as a whole. Then now what?
Okay, I think.
Oh, okay, fine. So that's the idea of 10. The idea of 10, which I'll show you at the end of the shir. The idea of 10 is an idea in Eidah, and whenever 10 is used, it's really reflective of Klal Yisrael as a whole. That's really the point where it becomes public and it becomes Klal Yisrael. That's why the Torah says Besoch B'nai Yisrael. Besoch B'nai Yisrael implies, 10 men. Okay? Okay, so now this, and we're going to put everything together, as I said before, in the beginning of this year. So the first point of Rashi is that in order for a person to be able to accomplish this mitzvah, there has to be a perfection in their actions and in their learning. And if you lack in either quality, you won't be able to accomplish this. But now the actual nature of the mitzvah is that you have to protect Klal Yisrael, and you have to protect them from this pegam, and the opposite is the case. You have to elevate Klal Yisrael's ability to perceive God properly. Now we have this other point. Ukshu moser atmo, yimser atmo al menas lamos. That when a person does actually give in to the guy who's pointing a gun to his head, he has to have in mind that he's willing to die. Shekola moser atmo al menas hanes ein osen lo nes. So anyone who gives up of his life with the intention of a miracle happening, ein osen lo nes. The nes won't occur. Shekein matzinu b'chananya mishal v'azariah. We see this case by Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Shalom Masru Atman al Menas Hanes. Okay, so let me just explain the story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and then try to explain this point in Rashi. If we look in, the words are kind of hard, so I'm not going to read the Hebrew. I'll just read the English. If you look at number 6, I printed out the English. It says, the case was by Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar created this big image, and he wanted all the people to bow down to this image, this tselem, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah refused to bow down. And if you look at number 15, it says, "Now behold, you are destined at the time that you hear the whistling horn, the clavichord, the harp, the psaltery, the bagpipes, and all kinds of music to fall and prostrate yourselves to the image that I made." So Nebuchadnezzar is commanding everybody including Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, to bow down to the image, and if you do not prostrate yourselves at that time, you shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. And who is a god who will? And who is a god who will save you from my hand? He's actually referring to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah because they refused to bow down. So he's telling them, if you don't bow down this time, I'm going to throw you into the fiery furnace. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered, those are Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah, answered and said to the king, Nebuchadnezzar, we do not care to answer you about this matter. Behold, there is a God whom we worship. He can save us from the burning fiery furnace, and from your hands, O king, he will save us. Okay, so Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah say that we're not going to give in, and Hashem will save us from the burning fire. And if not, and if he doesn't save us, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not worship your God, neither will we prostrate. Okay, Rashi learns from the fact that it says, and if not, that they were aware of the fact, this is what's interesting, and somebody I think pointed this out at the beginning of this year. They were aware of the fact that a nace could occur. They say, he will save us, but then they say, and if not, but they're also aware of the fact that it potentially could not occur, and they're willing to give up their lives regardless of whether a nace will occur or not. Okay, but it's really strange. What is Rashi trying to focus on? Is he saying that, if he's saying that a person shouldn't rely on a nace, he should give an example of people who did rely on a nace and who died? Or why bring an example from Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah who did not rely on a nace and a nace occurred? More often than not, a nace won't occur. So why bring an example from the case where they were willing to be Moser and a nace occurred? Why not bring the other case, that a person, if you had a case where a person relies on the nace and then the nace doesn't occur? And also, why do they say, Hashem, he will save us? What is that concept? Why are they even mentioning the idea of nace? They shouldn't even have the idea of nace in their mind. They should just say, listen, this person is commanding us to bow down to this idol. We don't care. We're going to die. We're willing to die. Why even mention, he will save us? Hashem will save us. Okay, so this is a deep idea, and it flows from the last idea in Rashi. So the last idea in Rashi is that Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem is really an idea in elevating and preventing desecration of Hashem in the eyes of Klal Yisrael, in terms of its effect on Klal Yisrael. So what is the idea here that Rashi is expressing? You see, when this situation occurs, a situation of Kiddush / Chil Hashem, Klal Yisrael is affected, as mentioned by Rashi. Whenever Klal Yisrael is affected as a whole, so there's always potential for a hashgacha, for a nace to occur. So Rashi is saying that Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they understand that this will affect Klal Yisrael, that if they give in to Nebuchadnezzar and they give up of their lives, so it will have a positive effect on Klal Yisrael. And they understood that. And whenever that occurs, whenever you're in the framework of, you know, Klal Yisrael as a whole, the public, so there's always potential for hashgacha. There's always potential for a nace to occur. Okay, so what's the idea of if a person thinks about a nace, that a nace will occur, that it won't happen? You see, then the person has the wrong idea. If a person thinks that a nace will occur, he's thinking in the back of his mind that he will be saved and that there's some value to him being saved. But the idea, the whole idea of the nace here is not in terms of the individual, but it's really for Klal Yisrael. It's really hashgacha to protect and to elevate the perception of Klal Yisrael as a whole. So the idea Rashi is pointing out is a beautiful idea, that if a person wants to be saved, if he thinks that a nace, not that you want to be saved, but if you think that a nace will definitely occur, then you have the wrong idea of the hashgacha of what's going on here. If you think a nace will occur, then you believe that you should be saved, that you're valuable to this mission and that you should be saved. But that's not the idea of the hashgacha and the nace. The nace will occur to protect Klal Yisrael, not to protect you. You, as a bystander, you might be protected, but it's not about you. It's about Klal Yisrael as a whole. So it really fits in nicely with the whole approach of Rashi, because Rashi is really focusing on Chil and Kiddush Hashem in terms of their effect on Klal Yisrael, in terms of affecting Klal Yisrael's perception of God. But now he's saying also, in addition, that once you put it in the framework of Klal Yisrael, you also have to take the individual out of it. And if the individual believes that a nace will occur, it certainly won't occur. Because the whole idea of the hashgacha is that it's not for the individual. It's the if hashgacha does occur, the individual will merely be a conduit for the hashgacha, but not be like an individual within the hashgacha. Okay, does that make sense? Anybody have questions? Do you want me to repeat that or summarize that? Okay, so let me summarize Rashi so far. So he's beautiful. He goes step by step. Ushmartem, a person, in order for a person to be able to accomplish these mitzvos, you have to be perfected in your learning and in your actions, and they can't be incomplete. Then he's explaining the nature of Chil Hashem and Kiddush Hashem, that it's only in public. Why? Because the whole idea of Kiddush Hashem and Chil Hashem is in terms of its effect on Klal Yisrael as a whole, in terms of their ability to perceive God properly. and to have the proper perception and the elevated perception of God. And then furthermore, if a person believes that there is a situation of nes here, and Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they're pointing that out, that there is a potential for nes. But the idea of nes has nothing to do with the individuals, it has to do with Klal Yisrael as a whole. And if the person believes that a nes will definitely occur, then he's not willing to give up his life, and he believes that he's part of the Hashgacha, that he's integral, and that's not the idea. That's not the nes that will occur. And actually, in the case of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, they were saved. They were willing to die, but they were saved in the end of the story. Okay? Questions? Thoughts?
I have a question.
Please.
Okay, so if the person's internal belief that he looks like he's going to die and like he's giving up his life.
Yeah.
And if the purpose of the nes would be for Kiddush Hashem, that would achieve the purpose anyways.
It would achieve the purpose. But whenever there's a situation where Klal Yisrael's perception of God will potentially be affected, so there's also potential for Hashgacha to come in. And it'll also, if God does interact, it'll also create a situation of Kiddush Hashem as well. So the idea that Kiddush Hashem is an opportunity for Hashgacha, for divine intervention, for Nisim to occur. Okay? Okay, so now the last pasuk. So we have two pasukim down and one pasuk left. What does this have to do with Yetzias Mitzrayim? He says at the end of Lamed Beis, "Beso ani Hashem mekadishchem, hamotziaschem me'aret Mitzrayim, liyosachem leelokim ani Hashem." Okay, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in order to be our gods. I am Hashem. And then also at the end of Rashi, he says, "Ani Hashem ne'mon l'shalim schar." So what is that idea? What's that concept? Why mention these possibilities? If we look also in number 8 and 9, whenever it says Ani Hashem, this is a general concept, and we keep asking these questions. So if we look at number 8, it says, Vayidaber Elokim al Moshe, Vayomer Elov Ani Hashem, Vayomer Elov Ani Hashem, Ne'amon L'shalim Schar Tov L'Mesalchem L'Fonai. Whenever it says Ani Hashem, it means to repay, that I am Hashem who repays Schar, I repay the good to those who follow in my path. V'lo L'chinam Shlachticha Ki'im L'kayim Devari Shadi Barti L'Avos HaRishonim. He says, "V'lashon hazeh matzinu shehu nedrash b'kamim mekomos ani Hashem ne'mon lipara k'shu amor etzel onesh." Whenever ani Hashem is mentioned by onesh, by punishment, it means I'm going to repay the person in a negative way. Kigon v'chilalta Hashem elokecha ani Hashem u'k'shu amor etzel kiyum mitzvos. When it says it by kiyum mitzvos, kigon u'shmartem mitzvosai v'atzisam osam ani Hashem ne'mon litein schar. And it's quoting our pasuk. It means that Hashem, he's trustworthy in terms of repaying schar. So why is that relevant to this mitzvah? Why mention Ani Hashem? And why even mention the concept that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim? Okay? Look at number 7 in the Ramban, and then we'll answer this question. He says, V'ded tam amoti eschem eretz Mitzrayim liyosachem elokim, shehu tam yichlo kol ha-mitzvos. This reason could be given for all mitzvos. That Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim to be our God, therefore we have to keep the mitzvos. Sheroi l'kadeh shmo aleihem. It's really appropriate for us to sanctify his name with regard to the mitzvos, ba'avur sha'anachnu avadav, because we're his servants, asher ga'alnu mimitzrayim, and he took us, he redeemed us out of Mitzrayim. Okay, but the question is, according to the Ramban, that's very nice that it applies to every mitzvos, but why is it mentioned here? What does this idea have to do with this particular mitzvah? So here also, I think Rashi is pointing out an insight, a very nice insight. You see, we were talking before about the philosophical background of a person who gives up their life. That philosophically, in order to be able to give up your life for a Torah, you can't look at the actions as hollow actions. They have to be internal. They have to be a part of you, and you have to understand why they are good for man and why, you know, they're in line with God's will. But that's just the philosophical part of man. But there's also a psychological part of man. And from a psychological standpoint, you know, nobody wants to die, and it's very difficult to face your own death, your own mortality. So the Torah over here, I think Rashi's saying this, is giving man two methods in which to accomplish this, in which to be able to accomplish this mitzvah and give up your life. And what are those two ideas? One idea is the avdus, that when a person in the back of his mind, when he's in this situation, if he can reference the concept that he's an eved, that he's a servant, then he can give up his life, and psychologically he'll be able to overcome his fears and be able to give up of his life. And the other idea is ne'mon l'shalim schar. A person has to believe in the back of his mind that there's going to be some good at the end of the road. You can't give up your life if you don't, from a psychological perspective, if you don't think that there's any good to doing this, any potential good. personal good. So the idea of Neman L'Shalim Schar is, and also the idea of Hamotzi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim is really telling a person or giving a person insight as to how to go through with it. So it's very, you're in this situation. Somebody's pointing a gun to your head. You're a perfected person. You understand mitzvos. Even so, psychologically, you have a barrier. There's a barrier there. I don't want to die. How do you do that? How do you just die? You know, Al Kiddush Hashem. So you have to reference the idea of Avdus, that I'm an Eved L'Hashem, that I'm a servant, and that idea would help a person. And the other idea is that you have to know Ne'eman L'Shalim Schar, even though it's like, usually it's a lower level, Ne'eman L'Shalim Schar. We usually say do mitzvos not to be Mekabel Schar. But in this situation, it's important for a person to recognize that, to see that, and to understand that there's a Schar here in order to be able to go through with it. And the Torah recognizes it. So in this situation, it's not a negative, it's actually a positive. Okay? So we have the three psukim. The first pasuk is that you have to perfect yourself. The second pasuk is telling you the nature of the mitzvah, that it's an idea in Klal Yisrael, that you have to protect Klal Yisrael from a defective idea of God, and the opposite is the case. You have to elevate their idea of God, and this mitzvah accomplishes that. And then we have the idea of the nes that Rashi points to, and he says that whenever you have this mitzvah, there's a potential for hashgacha to occur. And then the last idea, which is the last pasuk, Hamotzi Eschem Me'eretz Mitzrayim, and also the idea of Ne'eman L'Shalim Schar, it could be tied to the psychological concept of man. That man needs to reference certain ideas from a psychological standpoint in order to fight the barrier in terms of giving up your own life. Okay, and then just one last point. If you look at number 10 on the source sheets, it says, V'chein Amar of Ada Bar Ava, Minayin She'ena Yachid Omer Kedusha. Where do we know that a yachid, an individual, should not say kedusha? Shneamar v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. It says v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael. Kol davar shebekdusha lo yeh pachos me'asara. Anytime you have a davar shebekdusha like kedusha itself or kaddish, you need 10 people, 10 men. My mashma detani rav nai achua derabichia bar ava asya toch toch. How do they know this? They learn a gzera shava from toch toch. It says here, v'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael, that you should sanctify me amongst Klal Yisrael, within Klal Yisrael. Uchsiv hasam, and it says by the Meraglim, hibadlu mitocha eda hazos. It says to separate yourselves from this eda. Malahalan asara, afkan asara. By the Meraglim, there were 10, because you don't include Kalev and Yoshua. So too, over here, you require 10. So we see that there is a halachic idea, and it's also a philosophical concept, but there's a halachic idea of v'nikdashti. That the idea of an ikdashti is not just an idea through our actions. Yes, it's true, the Torah and the Iker Mitzvah is for a person to give up their life in order for people's perception of God to be elevated, but there's also an idea of verbalizing the Kedusha of God, the holiness of God, and we do that every day in Tefillah. But that too is also an idea in Klal Yisrael as a whole. It's not an idea in the Yachid, but it's really an idea in Klal Yisrael, and that's why you need 10 people. And as somebody asked that question before, but you see from this Gemara that it's an idea in Eda, that an Eda is referred to meaning 10 people, 10 men, and that's really Klal Yisrael as a whole, Klal B'nai Yisrael as a whole, B'soch B'nai Yisrael. And okay, so the concept is that we have two methods of being Mekadesh God. One is through our actions of giving up our lives for God and to sanctify God, and the other is through our verbalization of God's Kedusha, and that we do in Tefillah every single day. Okay, so let me just, so that's really the end of the shiur. Anybody have any questions? Okay, so once again, I'm gonna just put everything together. So we looked at one Rashi, and we just broke it apart, and we put it back together. And there's different components to the Rashi. The first component is you have to keep mitzvos in a perfected way. The second component is the nature of the mitzvah, that it's really an idea in the Rabbim. It's that you want to affect Klal Yisrael's perception of God, and also the possibility and the opportunity of nes occurring, because this is a din in Klal Yisrael, and not an idea in the Yachid. And then the last idea, which is an idea in how a person is supposed to overcome, from a psychological perspective, his a barrier to dying. So you have to reference the idea of Avdus, that I am a servant, and also the idea of Ne'eman L'Shalim Schar, that there is a Schar here. And even though that's a lower level by most mitzvos, in this situation it's necessary to make reference to that idea in order to go through with it. And then the last idea is that aside from just being Mekadesh God through our actions by giving up our lives, we're also Mekadesh God in tefillah by elaborating on his Kedusha. But we can only do that Bitzibor because, once again, it's a din in elevating Klal Yisrael's perception of God. It's not a din in the Yachid, in the individual, the person's perception of God, but it's an idea in elevating Klal Yisrael as a whole's perception of God. Okay? So that's the shiur tonight. Anybody? Okay, everybody have a good Shabbos. Any thoughts? Anybody want to add anything? Okay, have a good Shabbos, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Thank you.